Now we're holding on to Kof Ches Amud Bey's, the last line, continuing on the dinim in which Admon and the Chachamim are arguing. So far we had two of them, now we're up to the third. Mishnah says, HaPosik Mois LaChasson. If a father agreed to give a certain amount of money, your goods or whatever, to the chassan, we learned earlier in the Masechta that there would be a nidunya, there would be a dowry, usually that a kala brings into the marriage. So now the father agreed to give a certain amount to the chassan, uposhet loyas haregel, and afterwards he stuck out his foot. Now, what does stuck out his foot mean? Rashi gives two explanations. One is that it's a lashon of bizoyin. He's saying, I don't care to fulfill my commitment. So he's saying, in other words, you want something, take the dirt off my feet. I'm not offering anything else. Yes, I offered before that I'm going to give X amount, but now I'm reneging on that. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi's second explanation is that he's saying, I don't have any money. I'm bankrupt. So you might as well go hang me on a tree. Or even in Shita Mukubetzis quotes the Lashon to be saying that hang me by my foot on a tree. I don't have anything to give. So according to the first explanation, the guy is deliberately reneging on his commitment. According to the second one, he's just saying, I don't have anything to give. I'm bankrupt. What do you want from me? So Teshev Achatalbin Rosha. So the Tanakhama says that the girl will have to sit there until her hair turns white, which is it's an exaggerated expression, meaning to say, in other words, that there's no, they can't force the chassan to go through with the marriage, because he can say, I was agreeing to marry her, and my understanding was, and the father had agreed, that there's going to be X amount for Nadunya, and now he's not honoring his commitment, whether, according to the two explanations in Rashi, whether deliberately or whether just because he's bankrupt. Either way, why should I have to marry her? So therefore, the Tanakhama is saying that she just stays there in limbo until either the money is raised or the chassan agrees to marry her without the nidunya, or he divorces her. But in other words, we can't force him to do any of the above, says the Tanakhama. But Admon, here's where Admon disagrees and says, "Yecholi he should tell her." She has the ability to say, and it's a valid argument in Beis Din, Ilu ani pasakti la'atzmi. Look, if I had made up this amount for myself, if I were the one running the negotiation and I had promised to give X amount, fine, Eishavat Chetalbin Roshi, then I would understand now that I'm not upholding my commitments, then that's my fault and I should sit here until my hair turns white. In other words, I'll have to stay in limbo. But this is different. Achshav she'aba posak. But now my father arranged it on my behalf. Mani cholalasis. So what can I do? I can't be responsible for what he said he's going to do. Oy knois, oy pater. So either marry me without the nedunya or divorce me and let me get on with my life. Omer Ram Gamliel, royani es divrei Admon. And like we had in the two previous Mishnayos, Ram Gamliel says, I agree with what Admon is saying. Now, first of all, Tosfos points out a couple of things. First of all, Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that this is talking about when even the Chachamim, when they're saying Teshev Achatalbin Rosha, would only mean if when the negotiations were being done for the Nedunya, she was there. If she wasn't there at the time, then even the Chachamim would not say that we're gonna leave her in limbo because of that. So that's one thing Tosfos says. Also, another point Tosfos makes is, we learned in the previous parak, that there's a case, we call it Hein Dvorim Aniknim V'Amira. We said at the beginning of the previous parak on Daf Kuf Beis that if a couple has gotten engaged and the respective parents of the Chosin and Kala are negotiating the terms of the wedding and the terms of the Nedunya and whatever, and then they're Makadish, then we hold them to what they said. It's considered as though they made a kinyan, even though they said it verbally. So Tosfos says, in that case, then what do we mean? The father is saying, I don't want to honor my commitments, and therefore, according to the Chachamim over here, we leave his daughter in limbo. If there's a kinyan on it, we have to force him to honor the commitment, just like anything else that was made with a kinyan. So here Tosfos says, this is, we have the explanation of the Rashbam that we quoted there, that it means that that's only, we hold them to that only if the Kiddushin were right after the negotiations, right after the Chosin's father said, I'll give X amount, and the Kala's father said, I'll give X amount, right away then they did the Kiddushin, then we would have, then we would hold them to it as a matter of halacha. But here we would be talking about where it wasn't right away, they were Makadosh, it was sometime later. And then Tosfos goes and discusses the ins and outs of that a little more and says, maybe not necessarily. Maybe what we're saying is we can go according to Rashi's second explanation. We're not talking about that the father is saying deliberately, I don't want to give. He's saying, I don't have what to give. I'm bankrupt. And by the way, in modern Hebrew, they use that word poshat layasat regel to mean that a person goes bankrupt. So in other words, in modern Hebrew, they use Rashi's second explanation they use this expression according to Rashi's second explanation. Anyway, Tosfos says, if we follow that second explanation, then what we mean is not that the father doesn't want to, he can't, he's bankrupt. And what we're talking about over here is, let's say the chosin says, you know what, I don't want to bother schlepping him to Beis Din and going through that whole rigmarole. So therefore, the Chachamim are saying that the girl is left in limbo, and Admon is saying no, not unless she herself had made the arrangements on behalf of herself. Different Rishonim and Achronim talk about more details in that. One interesting point, the Shilta Agdiborim, which is a commentary on the Rif, brings that if she herself has the ability to give it, then the Gemara is going to end up saying the halacha is like Admon, that if she the halacha is like Admon, that if the father arranged it on her behalf, she has, and like Tosfos said, that was when she was present, so therefore like she bears a certain responsibility for it because she knew what her father is capable of and not capable of. But in any case, if she herself didn't make the arrangements, then we can't keep her as an aguna like that. Then she has the right to say, either marry me or divorce me. The Shilta Agdiborim points out, and this is brought lahalacha in Shulchan Aruch, that if she does have the ability to pay it, then we do make her pay it. Then she doesn't have a valid argument, oy knois, oy pter. Then the chosin can tell her, look, the fact is you have the ability to pay. It's true you didn't make the negotiations. Your father did. Nevertheless, the fact is you have the ability to. So don't tell me, oy knois, oy pter, pay up, or else pay up. Otherwise, I'm not obligated to do either one of those things. So the Shilta Agdiborim brings that concept. It's brought lahalacha and Shulchan Aruch, although the Bach and the Beis Shmuel on Shulchan Aruch over there don't say it's not so simple that is correct al pi halacha. So the Gemara starts off. Masnissin deloiki haitana. Now our Mishnah, let's review what the scenario in the Mishnah is. The girl herself wasn't involved in the negotiations. At most, like Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi, she was present at the time, but her father is the one who did the negotiations. Then we're saying that that's when the machloikus of Admon and the Chachamim is. But in Admon's statement in the Mishnah, he says that she can say, if I had arranged for myself, then I agree that you could leave me in limbo, implying exactly that. If she had arranged them, if she had arranged things herself, if she had said, I pledge that there will be X amount of Nadunya, and now she falls through, whether deliberately or whether because she went bankrupt, then Admon would agree, according to our Mishnah, that the Chosin has no further responsibilities towards her and he can leave her in limbo. By the way, the Ramah does point out in Shulchan Aruch that all of this would only be before they got married. Once they got married, once the Nisuin have taken place, by no means can the Chosin say that I'm not going to fulfill my obligations because you didn't fulfill yours. Once they got married, he has his various obligations, Minatorda and Midirabanan, as we learned before. So the Mishnah says, the Gemara says, Masnissin Deloiki Hai Tana. Our Mishnah evidently is not like the following Tana. The Tanya, Omer Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, Loi Nechlaku Admon B'Chachamim Ala Posik Mois L'Chastani or Poshet Bayos Arego. Admon and the Chachamim do not disagree when he agrees to give X amount of money to his chosin for the nedunya or poshet layas aregel, and then he doesn't give, whether, as Rashi had said, either the first explanation that it means he's reneging on his commitment or the second one that he went bankrupt, So Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says, everybody agrees, she chola hishtomer, abba posik alai mani yichola lasis, where she has the ability to say, my father decided it on my behalf, so what do you want from me? I can't be expected to be responsible for what he said, therefore either marry me as is or divorce me. Al-Manechlaku, so Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says, what is the case where Adman and the Chachamim disagree, al-shaposka hi al-atzma, where she made the arrangements for herself. She herself pledged that there would be a certain amount for Nadim. So now she doesn't do it. Where now, according to Rabbi Yosef Yehuda, that's the case where the Chachamim say that he can leave her in limbo and she'll stay there till her hair turns gray. And Admon Omi Yecholi Shatoymar, whereas Admon says, even in that case, she has the right to say, Kisvurani Sha'aba Noisin Alai, I thought that my father was going to give it on my behalf. Now my father in the end is not giving on my behalf. So what can I do? Either marry me or divorce me. And on that, Rav Gamliel would say that I accept what Admon says. So in other words, we have two possible cases. One is where her father made the arrangements. The other is where she made them. In the Mishnah, we're saying that the machloikas is when the father made the arrangements, but that if she made them and then doesn't fulfill them, then everybody agrees that the chosin can leave her in limbo. And according to only when the father made the arrangements, only then do the chachamim still say he can leave her in limbo, and Admon says no. In the Braiser, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda is saying that no. If the father had made the arrangements, there's no question everybody would agree that the chosin can't leave her in limbo. Something has to be done. We have to hold them to something, either marrying her or divorcing her. The machloikas, according to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, is only when she herself made the arrangements on her own behalf, which there is an explanation from one of the achronim, who says it has a pirush on Shulchan Aruch, who says that maybe before actually we quoted what Tosfos says that we're talking brings from the Yerushalmi that we're talking about in our Mishnah also is talking about that she was present. So now the same thing also would be when we're talking about in the Braisa, when Rabbi Yosef Yehuda is saying that it was that she did it and she thought her father would do it, would have to mean that her father was present. And therefore, she has grounds for thinking that her father would have upheld the commitment. So those are the two different ways of understanding the machloikas of Admon and the Chacham. So the Gemara says Tana. We learn in a Braisa. Vamed Murim. When is this talking about Bigdoila? When the girl is an adult, so she has the ability to arrange things for herself or to make commitments for herself. Alva b'ketana. But if she's a ketana, Koifin, then we force. So the question is, Koifin Laman. What do you mean? Who are we forcing? Ilema La'av, do we mean that if the girl was a katana and she said herself, I'm going to give X amount for Nadan, and then she's reneging on it, then we should force the father to do it? That can't work. Ipchamibola, it should be the other way around. If she's a katana, how does she have how does a katana have the ability to make a binding tanai that should bind her father to the extent that we can now force him to honor her commitment? She was a katana. She doesn't know what she's talking about. Elo, I'm a rabba kofin labal litin get. So rabba says the kofin of the braisa means that if she's a katana, we will force the husband to give her a get or to marry her if he wants without a nadin, as the case may be. But in other words, the point is, because she's a katana, then definitely, we can't say that that her commitment had any validity, and we can't say that she should be responsible for anything that happened. We can't even say that she should say, you know what, her father said it, and she was there at the time, and she knew what was going on because she's a katana. She doesn't know what's going on. Therefore, we can't leave her in limbo like that, according to everybody. And everybody would agree that we are going to force the husband, the chosin, to give her a get or to marry her, as the case may be. Okay. So that's the machlokas of Admon and the Chachamim. Again, we have two different versions of the machlokas: the Brais, the Mishnah's version, and the Brais's version, according to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. So now the Gemara says, "Omer Rabbi Yitzchak ben Elazar Mishmei de Chizkiya." Everywhere in all the Mishnayos where we have, in each of the three previous Mishnayos we had, where Admon says something and Rav Gamliel says, I accept what Admon is saying. So in all those cases, halacha kamosa, says Rav Yitzchak ben Elazar, in the name of Chizkiah, in all those cases, the halacha is like Rav Gamliel. As opposed to, we still have four more cases that are coming up in the following Mishnayos, where Admon says something and Rav Gamliel does not react to that. So then the halacha is not necessarily like Admon in those. So the Gemara says, Omalei Rava l'Rav Nachman. So Rava asked Rav Nachman, this that Rabbi Yitzchak ben Elazar is saying, Afilu b'braisa, does it apply even to the case in the braisa, which we said the case in the braisa of Rabbi Yosef Yehuda is where she arranged, where she made the arrangements, she made the agreement on her own. Omalei, so Rav Nachman says, sure, mi kamun b'mishnah. After all, Rabbi Yitzchak ben Elazar's rule is not wherever Admon says, only in the Mishnah. He says, B'chol makam sh'amar Rav Gamliel kamin. He says, wherever Rav Gamliel says that he accepts Admon's statement. Well, in the Braisa also, we have Rav Gamliel saying he accepts Admon's statement. Therefore, the halacha has to be like the Braisa as well. Now, Tosfos wonders, though, one second. I mean, how are we passing like both the Mishnah and the Braisa? They're contradicting each other because, again, in the Mishnah, we said that if she makes the agreement on her own, then Teshuvat Shetal Ben Rosha, then she's in limbo. And in the Braisa, we're saying that not. So Tosfos says, okay, what it means is that Rava is asking. That the Braisa is telling us that if she made the arrangements for herself, that's when the machlokas is. Are you telling me that within that the halacha would be like Admon? And he says yes. That's what it means. So yes, the Tanakama of the Tana of our Mishnah and the Tana of the Braisa would disagree. What exactly is the case where Admon holds one way and the Chachamim holds the other way? But either way, whichever one, the point is, we're not saying the halacha is like both of them. It can't really be. Tosfos says like both of them because it's one or the other. But whichever one we accept the halacha, the Mishnah or the Braisa, we're going to say the halacha is like Admon. So in fact, the final halacha in Shulchan Aruch is that we go according to the Mishnah, and we say that if she made the arrangements for herself, then we could say Teshuvat Shetal Ben Rosha, unless again we said the Shilta Gibordim brings that if she has the ability to discharge the obligation, then we make her do that. Then the chosin can leave her in limbo if necessary, if she made the arrangements for herself. Whereas if her father did, then the halacha would be like Admon, that we can't leave her in limbo. We tell the chosin oik nois oik ter. The Gemara continues. Amar abzera amar rabba ba yinya beiz dvarim sha amar chonan halacha kayotzvay. Now, Rabbi Zera says in the name of Rabba ba yinya. As far as the two, now again, we started our parak by saying that Chonon held two dinim, of which the other Chachamim disagreed, and Admon said seven dinim, which the other Chachamim disagreed. So now, Reb Zera's rule is like this. The two things that Chonon said, halacha kayotzeboy, then the halacha is kayotzeboy, like the one who goes along with him. That's how Rashi explains. Now, usually the word kayotze boy means something similar, but here Rashi explains it means like this. Each of the two dinim that Chonon said earlier in our parak, we had Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai saying, Yofa Omer Chonon, that Chonon said correctly. So now what it means is, in both of those cases, the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who is on Chonon's side. And Shiva Dvarim Shama Admon Ein Halacha Kayotze Boy. On the other hand, the seven things that Chonon said, says Reb Zera, the halacha is not Kayotze Boy. The halacha is not like the one who stands on his side, namely Rav Gamliel. When Rav Gamliel says in each of these cases, Roya Anias Divrei Admon, the halacha would not be like Rav Gamliel. That's how Rashi explains the word Kayotze Boy. Tosfos doesn't like that. First of all, there's no reason to mention it. You just say the halacha is like Chonon or the halacha is not like Admon and have done with it. Why bring in Rabbi Yechim ben Zakkai or Rav Gamliel? Second of all, the word kayotze boy means something similar, or what it doesn't mean the Tana who's on the same side as him. So rather, Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hananel what it means is, Rabbi Yitzchok, what it means is that the Reb Zera is saying his rule. It means when Chanan says his two halachas, not only is the halacha like him in the two specific cases that he's talking about, but also any other case from which we can draw an analogy to another case to this one. On the other hand, in Admon's cases, not only is the halacha not like Admon, but not even in any similar Or no, the halacha might well be like Admon in some of these cases, but not in similar cases. The halacha might well be like Admon in some of these things, but not in any case, but not, we wouldn't be able to extrapolate from them to other similar cases. That's how Tosfos learned the kayotzebay. Okay, so the Gemara asks, my karma, what is Reb Zera in the name of Rabbi Bayumia mean with this rule of his? Ilema Hokikamar, does he mean as follows? Does he mean at face value? That it would mean that as far as the two things that Chanan says, the halacha is like him and kayotzeboi, meaning again, according to Rashi, that the halacha in each of those cases is like Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, who agrees with Chanan, or according to Tosfos, it would mean not only the halacha is like Chanan in those particular cases, but any similar case that we can analogize to it. And he would say, whereas with the seven things that Admon said, we would say the halacha is not like him in any of those seven, and not kayotzeboi either. The problem with that is, didn't Rabbi Yitzchok ben Elazar say in the name of Chizkiyah a few lines earlier in the Gemara that whenever Rabbi Gamliel says Royan yes divrei Admon, the halacha is like him? So we have three cases where Rabbi Gamliel says that, so the halacha ought to be like Admon in those three cases. Now, of course, we showed him point down, and what kind of question is that? Chizkiyah is a Tana, Rabbi Bayumi is a Tana, they're Amora. Chizkiyah is an Amora, Rabbi Bayumi is an Amora. They're allowed to disagree. What's the problem? But the answer is Chizkiyah was a very early Amora. He was a son of Rabbi Chiya, so he belongs to the first generation of Amoroyim. We're not going to assume, without a solid reason to do so, that Rabbi Bayumi, who belongs to a later generation, is going to disagree with such a prominent Amora as Chizkiyah. So therefore, so we have to try to understand what Rabbi Bayumi is saying in accordance with Chizkiyah, rather than to say that he should disagree. So Ela Hoki Kamer. So rather, what he means is as follows. Shnei Dvarim Shama Chanan Halacha Kamose B'chayotzeboi. What it would mean is the two things that Chanan says, the halacha is not only like him, but kayotzeboi, it's like the kayotzeboi as well, like the Tanoim who agree with him according to Rashi, or similar cases that we can draw an analogy to according to Tosfos. But Shivat Varim Sha'ama Admon in Halacha Kayotzeboi. Maybe what Rabbi Bar Yumi means is when it comes to Admon seven dinim, the halacha is not kayotzeboi, but the Hakam Moshe halacha b'kulu. But you could still say that he means the halacha is like Admon in those dinim themselves. So not in dinim that we could, not dinim that we can compare to them, that we can draw an analogy from to, but at least the actual dinim that Admon says in the three previous Mishnayos, the halacha would be like it. But problem is, so now we're saying that it sounds like he's saying the halacha is actually like Admon in all seven of his dinim, just that in those seven, we're saying only the din itself, but not anything else that we could extrapolate from it. Well, the problem with that is, only when Rav Gamliel says that I see and I accept the words of Admon as the halacha like him, implying omar ein loy omar loy, only if he says I see what Admon is saying, but if not, then not. So now, again, we shouldn't assume that Rabbi Bar Yumia is arguing with Chizkiyah. We should assume that he's just restating the same thing in different words. So therefore, so now according to Chizkiyah's rule, only in three of Admon's seven dinim is the halacha like him, because only in those seven does Rav Gamliel say the halacha is like him, that royani is divrei Admon. Therefore, so how can Rabbi Bar Yumi be saying that the halacha is like Admon in all seven of them, and just saying that in all seven of them we can't extrapolate other dinim from them? No, rather, what we have to say, what Rabbi Bayumia means and what Reb Zera means when he quotes it in his name, is in the two dinim that Chanan says, the halacha is like him as well as Kayotzeboi. The halacha is like him and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who's on his side, according to Rashi, or like him and other dinim that we can extrapolate from those, according to Tosfos. On the other hand, Shiva Dvarim Shalma Admon, when it comes to Admon, seven statements, Yesh Mehem Shalacha Kamos V'Chayotzeboi, some of them, the halacha is like him and like the Chayotzeboi, V'Yesh Mehem She'en Halacha Kamos Ela Chayotzeboi. And there were some of them where the halacha is not like him, but the halacha might be like him and like him and similar, but the halacha might not like be like him, but it might be so in cases that are similar to those. So namely, whenever Ram Gamliel says, I see what Admon is saying, halacha kamosa, then the halacha is like Admon, which would be the first three dinim that we have in our Perek, the previous three Mishnayos, but not the rest of them. There, the halacha would not be like Admon, since he doesn't have Rav Gamliel on his side, but the halacha might indeed be the halacha might still use Admon's opinion in other similar cases. The Masoras HaShas brings a different girsa, that in those cases, the halacha would, in the other four cases, the halacha would not be like Admon in those cases themselves or in any similar case. So it comes out, in other words, according to that, that Rabbi Bar Yumia is effectively saying the same thing as Chizkiyah, just putting it in different words. Chizkiyah had said, whenever Rabbi Gamliel says, Royani is different, Admon, the halacha is like him. And now Rabbi Bar Yumia is saying in a similar way, he's saying that among the things that Admon says, some of them the halacha is like him, some of them not. And we're saying now, we're understanding that means it depends whether Rabbi Gamliel is on his side or not. Continuing now with the next Mishnah, the fourth case where Admon disagrees with the Chacham. Ha'oder al ha'sodeh, if a person is protesting about a certain field, he claims that field was stolen from him. V'hu chasim olay al-be'ed. Now, that person, the muchzik in the field, is selling the field, and the one, the ma'aru, the one who was complaining, is actually signed as one of the edim on it. So Rashi gives the scenario. There's a field that Reuven claims that this field is his and Shimon stole it from him. Right now, Shimon is in possession of that field. Now, Shimon is going, Reuven is saying, Reuven is saying, not that Shimon stole it, he's saying, you, Shimon, right now are in possession of that field. You bought it from Levi, but you should know that Levi actually stole that field from me. Now, when Levi had previously sold the field to Shimon, then Reuven is one of the edim on it. So the question is, now when he wants to claim that the field was that Levi had stolen the field from him, is that a valid taina? Admon Omer, so Admon says yes, because he could say Hasheni Noyach Li Varishin Kosha Hemenu. He could say, you know what, the reason why I signed on such a shtar is because I knew that Levi is a tough guy. He's not going to listen to Beis Din. And therefore, I figured, you know what, if Levi himself is willing to sell the field to you, Shimon, let me grab the opportunity. I'll sign as an aide on that. And then once you, Shimon, have it, I know that you, Shimon, are the kind of person who I can deal with in Beis Din. Then I'm taking you to Beis Din and claiming that Levi stole the field from me in the first place. So Admon says the fact that he signed as an aide on this shtar doesn't mean that he forfeited his rights. Whereas the Chacham say no, by signing on such a shtar, he lost his schus because he'd have no business signing on such a shtar. The Meiri points out, so what does he want? What does he do? If he's saying Harishin Koshali Hasheni Noyachemenu, he would say beforehand, before the Edim sign on the shtar, he would go give them a moedah, he would go give them official notice, as we're going to talk about on Omid Beis, that you should know Levi stole this field from me and I plan to exercise my rights. And the fact that I'm signing on this shtar now does not mean that I'm forfeiting my rights. But if he didn't make any such moedah, then the Chacham say he lost his schus. Because what's he doing as an aide on the shtar? Continues the Mishnah. Asah simen la'acher. On the other hand, if he made it as a marker for another field, which means, so now you have two possibilities what that means. So Rashi says that it means like this. Suppose that Shimon, who is the muchzik in this field, is selling now a different field. He's not selling a different field to Reuven. He's selling it to somebody else. He's selling it to Yehuda. Now, when you're selling a field, you have to mark down how we know what the borders of the field are. You know, even nowadays, you look, for example, on a property deed, you'll see, you know, it'll mention that, you know, this property begins X number of feet from the corner of such and such and extends for X number of feet, whatever. The common way to do it in those times was that you would mark off, you would put the names of the adjoining fields. You would say, for example, that this field adjoins Reuven's field on the north and Shimon's field on the east, and then Levi's field on the south, and so on and so forth. And that's that way you demarcate it. So now, supposing that Shimon, the muchzik in this field, is selling a different field adjacent to this one, and he writes in the shtar that you should know one of the borders of that other field that I'm selling, it borders on such and such a field which I previously bought from Levi. And now Reuven is signed as an aide on that shtar. So now everybody agrees, Ibn Ishusay, for sure, Reuven has lost his rights to claim that the field was stolen from him by Levi, because at least in the case where the field itself is being sold by Levi to Shimon, then he can argue, Hasheni Koshali, Hasheni Noyachli, Arishin Koshay Menu, that I wanted to get it out of Levi's possession and into Shimon's, where I'd have an easier time getting it back in Beis Din. But when Shimon himself, the Mochzeh, is using that field as a marker for some other field to show what the border of some other field is, why would Reuven sign onto the shtar, sign where it says, where the shtar is saying that this adjoins a field that I bought from Levi? There'd be no reason to do that. So therefore, even Admon agrees then that he lost his horse to later on claim that the original field was stolen. So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye lo shonu ala eid. First of all, the din of our Mishnah, the machlokas of our Mishnah, is only talking about if Reuven is one of the edim on it. Because the edim actually have to read what's in the shtar. And when they sign on the shtar, they're signing on that everything in the shtar is truthful. Abel Dayan, but if Reuven is one of the dayanim on it, so the shtar is brought in front of him to do kiyum shtaris, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, where we have to certify that the signatures of the edim are genuine. So now, if Reuven is one of the dayanim who signs off on that certification of the signatures, loy ibed eschusay, he did not lose his schus with that. And the reason is the Toni Rav Chiya, based on what Rav Chiya teaches in a Braisa. When Edim sign a shtar, they cannot do that unless they first read it. Because after all, they're testifying about what it says in the shtar, that it's true. So therefore, they have to read it first. So now, when Reuven read the shtar, then he should be saying to himself, one second, what are you saying that you're buying? What are you saying that you're buying? So according to the Chachamim in our Mishnah, he would be saying at that point, what do you mean you're buying this field from Levi? This Levi actually stole this field from me. But the dayanim can sign on a shtar even though they didn't read it. All they need to do is verify that the signatures are valid. Okay, Rishonim point out they do have to at least check the names of the parties to the transaction, because they have to make sure that the edim are not relatives of theirs or something. But other than that, the dayanim do not have to read every detail of the shtar, because they're basically there just to certify the signatures. Okay. So if Reuven is a dayan, then even the Chachamim agree he hasn't lost his chus. Now we said asah siman la'acher, and so I forgot to mention. So Rashi understands asah siman la'acher, as we said, that Shimon is selling a different field, and he uses this field that's being contested as a marker for one side of it. Tosfos brings a different explanation from the Yerushalmi, that what it means is that it can mean also that Reuven himself, the protester, he himself is selling a different one of his fields, and he uses this disputed field as a marker and says, the field that I'm selling adjoins the field that Shimon, adjoins the field of Shimon. So again, the point would be, why is he saying the field of Shimon when he's claiming, if he wants to claim later that it's not Shimon's, because Levi, who sold it to Shimon, stole it first from him, from Reuven, so therefore then Ibed is Chosei. Rishonim point out, the Ritva points out, both explanations can be valid. I'll be halacha. One doesn't really contradict the other. So whether it's that Shimon used it as a simon and Levi and Reuven is signed on such a shtar, or whether Reuven himself used it as a simon in his own shtar, either way, then yeah, everybody would agree that Ibed is chosen. So now, when I saw simon la'achar, I'm gonna buy lo shanu ela la'achar. Now that applies only when he made a simon where he's selling it to somebody else. So again, in Rashi's scenario, Shimon is selling a field to somebody else. And in Tosfos' scenario, it means that Reuven is selling a field to somebody else. Avala atzmai, but But if the field is being sold to him himself, loy ibid eschus, then he did not lose a schus. Meaning, suppose that now, after Shimon is in possession of this field, now he offers to sell it to Reuven, and Reuven, meanwhile, wants to claim that Levi stole it from him, and therefore he shouldn't have to buy it, should be given back to him free. Nevertheless, even though that's the case, loy ibn eschus, then he did not lose his schus. De Omar, because Reuven can say, if I didn't do that, if I hadn't been quiet, he says, if I had not done that, if I had not been quiet, loy havim ezabin, loy niali, then Shimon wouldn't have sold it to me at all. What I wanted, in other words, Reuven is saying, I wanted to end up back in possession of my field. If I had to lay out money for it, which I shouldn't have had to because I'm claiming that it was stolen, fine, at least the field is back in my possession. Now I don't have the whole rigmarole of going to Beis Din and proving that the field was mine because it's mine again now anyway. Then it's just a matter of getting the money reimbursed from Shimon, which is much easier. So he might say then, so the fact that when Shimon sold it to him, Shimon writes down in the Shnar, this field that I bought from Levi, I'm selling to you, and Reuven doesn't say anything at the time, doesn't mean that he forfeited his rights. It means that afterwards he'll still have the right to take Levi to, or he'll take, well, to take Shimon to Beis Din and demand his money back, and in turn Shimon will go to Levi and get reimbursement and so forth, and eventually it'll all get worked out. Because the Gemara continues, my islachal meimar. What are you going to say? That maybe I should forfeit my rights because he boiled the mimsa moida? Because maybe I, Reuven, should have gone and declared a moida in front of Edim. You're saying that maybe I should have declared before I buy the field from Shimon, bring together two Edim and tell them, in fact, the only reason I'm buying this field is only in order for me to have it back. But in fact, it has really been my field all along because it left my possession only because Levi stole it from me. And I plan to eventually seek reimbursement from Shimon or from Levi. Well, we can't say that because, as the expression is, chavra chavra islay, your friend has a friend, but chavra de chavra chavra islay, and the friend of your friend has a friend. In other words, once you tell something to people, it tends to get around. So therefore, Reuven is saying, I didn't want to give him a duh in a case like that because I was concerned that eventually word of it will get back to Shimon. And then Shimon is going to say, well, I don't want to sell it to you anymore. So now Reuven has a valid claim in Beis Din to say that I was quiet, not because I gave up my rights to that field, but just the opposite, in order that the sale should go through without any problems. And then I still plan to take Shimon to Beis Din and get my money reimbursed because I shouldn't have had to pay for it in the first place. Okay, the Gemara gives a case. There was a case. Now, we did say in the Mishnah that if he made it a simon for something else, then ibid eschusay, where again, we have the two possibilities. It means that Shimon sold a different field and used this one as a simon for it, or it means that Reuven sold a field and used this field as a simon for it. Anyway, so there was a case like that. So he made it a simon for a different one, according to either of these possibilities. Then he came to Beis Din saying, you know what, I didn't forfeit my rights on that. Now, if he was still at that point, Beis Din would have told him, I'm sorry, it doesn't work. We say in the Mishnah, it doesn't work. But the twist is, v'shachiv, before anything had a chance to happen, he passed, the Ma'ara, Reuven, in our scenario, passed away. And he set up an apotropos to administer the estate on behalf of his children, the Yisoyim. So now, the apotropos came to Abaya to argue on behalf of the Yisoyim. So he says, the fact is, this field was stolen from Reuven, and Reuven wanted it back. That's why he started an error. That's why he started proceeding in Beis Din. So Abaya says, well, what do you want? And we say in the Mishnah, saw simon la'acha ibid eschusay, that if he made it a simon for something else, he lost his schus. The guy who appointed you the apotropos, Reuven, died. But why does that make a difference? The fact is, once he made it a simon, he forfeited it. Omar, so the apotropos answer is no. Because if the father of the Yisayim, Reuven, was still alive, he could argue and say, you know what, I didn't make the whole field a simon for the other field. What I did is I said that one furrow, one ridge in the field is the simen. In other words, it's possible, conceivably, you can divide up a field into strips and sell them off individually. So here, what he's saying is the last strip on this field, which adjoins the next field, is the one that I made the simen for the rest of it. But not necessarily the rest of the field, did I say, is a simen for it. So therefore, so he could have argued, and therefore the Apoturpa says, I'm arguing on his behalf that that's how it should be, and therefore we shouldn't say that he forfeited his rights to argue about the whole rest of the field. Amalei, so Abaye tells him, Shaper Kamer, you know what you're saying is valid. The Amar of Yechanan, because in fact Rabbi Yechanan says, Imtan v'Amar Telam Echadasi Silacha, that if in fact Reuven in our scenario argues back and based in and says, I didn't mean that the whole field is meant to demarcate the other one, I meant just one foe of it. Neman, then we would believe him. So, okay, so you have a valid point. You can claim that on behalf of Reuven. Now, the interesting question is that Rishonim bring up, why did Abaye himself not think of that? If Abaye is saying that this is a good point and he knows what Rabbi Yochanan says, why is he waiting until the Apotropos makes the point? So Tosfos says that what it is Abaye had forgotten about it until now the Apotropos mentioned it, so now it jogged Abaye's memory. Otherwise, Abaye himself would have brought up this point. We have a rule, Toyin in the Yodish. We always try to bring up whatever valid arguments in Halacha are possible on behalf of the Yoshin. So Tosfos says it just slipped Abaye's mind. On the other hand, the Tosfos Rid brings over here that not necessarily. This kind of claim, yes, if a person claims it, it's a valid claim, as Rabbi Yochanan is saying, but it's not a normal kind of claim. Usually when a person says that this field adjoins that one, he means the entire field, not just one foe of it. So sure, if Reuven himself had claimed the thing while he was alive in Beis Din, we'd have to pay attention to what he's saying. But now Abaye is thinking that it's not something that's the responsibility of Beis Din to bring up that potential claim on behalf of the Yisrael. If the Apotropos himself comes up with a specific claim, then yes, we have to pay attention to it based on what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. But to go so far as to say that the Dayan himself, Abaye in this case, should have to bring up that argument, not necessarily, because that's an unusual kind of thing. Okay, continues the story in the Gemara. So okay, he tells the Apotropos, Zil Havle Mias Telemechad. Okay, so go give this other guy the one furrow, the one ridge of the field, because obviously at least Reuven admitted before he died that at least that belongs to the other guy, to Shimon. Okay, the problem was Havala Richba de Dikli. It turned out that one furrow had a hedge of palm trees that were, Rashi says, richba means mokovin zau gavze. They're connected one on top of the other. So like these palm trees are growing in a ridge over there, one next to the other, and making almost like a living fence on the property. Now, so Tamid Rabbeinu Yonah says that kind of thing is a very important thing. A person doesn't want to give up such a thing so easily. So, Omerle, so now the Apotropos comes back with a new argument. He says, if the father of the Yisoyim, if Reuven was still alive, he could have argued and said, yes, it's true at the time when Shimon sold that other field, then that ridge belonged to him, but I went and bought it back from him. So now, after all, it belongs to me. Again, Amalei Shaper Kamet, and again, Abaye says, you know, you have a good point. We can accept such an argument. If after there's a shtar where Shimon is selling a property to somebody else, and it says in it that this field adjoins the field, and this field adjoins the field that I bought from Levi. And Reuven was one, and Reuven was an aide on such a document. And we said in the Mishnah, if later on Reuven says, I bought that field back from Shimon, or the one ridge of the field from Shimon, then we can believe him. Neman, then we believe him. So therefore, so yes, you have a good point. You can argue that on behalf of your son. Now, why should we believe him? Rashi says it's a case of a pesha, also a pesha hit. After all, Rashi says the case is, now we have to understand, the case is not, when we say that Reuven is Ma'arer, we don't just mean that he comes to Beis Din saying, oh, this field was stolen from me. We tell him, bring some kind of evidence. We're talking about he has evidence. He has Edim that this field used to belong to him and was stolen from him. The only question is, was it Levi who stole it or was it somebody else? So now does Shimon come to own one furrow of the field based on what we said before? Is only because Reuben agreed to it tacitly by saying in the shtar that this field, by signing on a shtar that says that this field is, that this field adjoins a different one. Well, a pesha also a pesha hitter. Now he's saying I bought it, so therefore he should have rights there again. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation, and therefore rather Tosfos says that so Tosfos says no, it's not a pesha also a pesha hitter. It's not a migri. What it is Tosfos says actually it is a migri. What we're talking about over here is that there is a shtar where this field is marked off as the border of another field, but the signatures of the Edom on that shtar have not yet been verified. So therefore, Reuven has the ability to argue in Beis Din that the signatures are forged, that the shtar is forged. So now instead he's saying that yes, the signatures are valid, but I did sign on that at the time, but afterwards I went and bought that edge of the field back from Shimon, then we can believe him, because then he has a migri on that. So now we're saying again, either according to Tosfos, Abaye himself should have thought of such an argument, except that he forgot, or according to Tosfos, read again, that's a kind of unusual situation, unusual enough that we wouldn't say that the Beis Din is responsible to come up with such an argument. But if the Apotropos comes up with it, then so much the better. So now, Amar Abaye says, you know what, you can learn from this kind of story. If a person has to arrange for an Apotropos for his children, let him find an Apotropos of the caliber of this guy, where he knows how to turn things over. He knows how to bring up good arguments on behalf of the Yisoyim, on behalf of his words, like this guy did, where he came up with arguments completely out of left field that even was saying Abaye himself might have forgotten about, or Abaye might have figured, if not something that Beis Din, they're not valid arguments enough for Beis Din to bring them up. But this guy thought of them. So you see what a good apotropos he is. So in the future, Abaye says, anybody who has to appoint an apotropos, see to it that he's as sharp and as capable as this guy. Okay. Mishnah says, the next case where Admon and the Chachamim disagree, the fifth case, Misha Holach L'medina Segan. If a person owns a field, and then he went overseas, and when he comes back, but of the derech sadeh, the road, the path to his field is lost. Meanwhile, you have, in other words, like this, he had a path to his field that passed through the surrounding fields. So let's say, in other words, his field is not near the road or something. His field is in the middle, surrounded by other fields. So up until now, he had a path to his field that passed through the other ones. Now, over the years that he was away, then the location of that path has been forgotten. Now, the Nesivus on Shulchan Aruch makes an interesting point. He says, we're not talking about where the guy actually owned the path. If he actually owned it outright, then we're not going to have the Machlokas in the Mishnah over here, whether he's entitled to it back. Of course, he's entitled to something that's his property. What we're talking about is where the path to begin with was just an easement. He had no rights to the actual land of that path, just that he had permission. He had arranged with the owner of one of the surrounding fields that his path would pass through that guy's property. So he has an easement. So now, over the years, we lost track of where that easement is. Admon omi yelech lebitzara. So Admon says he is entitled to a path, but it has to be the shortest possible path, which Rishonim explained by the shortest possible path. What we mean is the one that crosses the smallest field. So we don't mean the shortest as in like the one that's closest to the road or whatever. We just mean the shortest one as in the one that will get him out of that box the soonest, namely, in other words, the one that goes through the smallest of the four fields. But he's entitled to it whether the owner of that field likes it or not. Because after all, he did have a path at one point. But the Chum say no. Yikne lederech b'mei mana. Let him buy a path for 100 mana. In other words, the owner of the field can charge him whatever he wants for a path. Oh, yifrach ba'aver, or the poor guy is going to have to fly through the air. In other words, he has no recourse. He's going to have to pay whatever the owner of the field demands from him to reestablish that easement. Now, by the way, the Nesivus says it. Not everybody agrees with that. There are Achronim who disagree with that and say that it might even apply when the actual land of the path did belong to him, but over the years we've lost track where it is. But anyway, so the point is, anyway, Admon is saying that he is entitled to a path, whether they like it or not. Macham say no, that the owner of the field can tell them that no, either you, if you're willing to buy one from me, then good. If not, then tough luck. So the Gemara asks, my time of the Rabbanon, Shapir Kama Admon. Why are the Chachamim saying that he has no recourse? Doesn't Admon have a very good point? Let's assume that all four fields surrounding his all belong to the same person. So then if they all belong to the same person, no matter what, the path was through his field somewhere. So why shouldn't he have a right to demand and based in a path? And the answer is, because the case is where the four fields around this one belong to four different people. So therefore, any one of them, he takes the owner of the first field, Reuven, to Beis Din. Reuven can say, I don't know whether your path was in my field, maybe it was in Shimon. And Shimon will say Levi's. And so, well, the question is, my time at the Admon. Well, then why does Admon say, how can he go to Reuven, for example, and say, you have the smallest field, therefore I demand a path through your field? Doesn't Reuven have every right to say, no, your path used to be through Shimon's or Levi's or Yehuda's? So the answer is, Omar Rava, Barbar de Osir Mekayach Arba. If you have four people who bought from four previous people, so now you have the four owners of the field, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda, each one on a different side, and they had previously bought from other people. They had previously bought from Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and David. So then, or va'abod osim koyachad, or if you have that originally all four surrounding fields were all owned by one person, they were all owned by Avraham, and later on, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda went and bought them, then everybody would agree, even Admon is going to agree, that each one of them can push him off to the other one, and he doesn't have the right to a path unilaterally. Every one of them can say, you know what, we're an independent person, you don't have a proof where your path was, maybe it was in one of the other three fields, so leave me alone, or go and buy a path. The machlokas is when you have one person bought from four different people. So you used to have that the four surrounding fields were owned by Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda. Now Avraham went and bought all four fields from the four of them. So now is where you have the machlokas. Admon sava mikol makom davka isli gabach. So Admon says that the owner of the field in the middle can say, look, Avraham, no matter what, I have a path by you, because it's true that the fields used to belong to different people, and then I wouldn't have had any recourse. But by the time I've come back to town, you own all the fields. No matter what, however you look at it, my path is through one of your fields. So give me the shortest path. But for Rabban and Sabri, but the Chacham hold no. The owner, Avraham, the owner of the four fields, can tell him, if you're quiet, then you're quiet. In other words, if you don't start making a scene about it, then fine. I'm willing to sell you a field. I'm willing to sell you a path or an easement or whatever at a cheap price. The Eloi, but if not, what I can just as well do is go and return the four shtore mechira to their owners. I can say, in other words, fine, I'm giving up my rights to these properties and I'm returning them to respectively Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda. And you won't be able to make any claims against them, because again, when it's four different people, even Admon agrees that he has no recourse, because every one of them can say the path is through somebody else's field. So that is why Admon says, so that's why we have the machlokas of Admon and the Chachamim. Tosfos learns a little differently, especially because, I mean, what do you mean Rashi is saying that he'll sell them at a cheap price? But what do you mean? He's not saying in the Mishnah, the Chachamim are saying that he might have to buy a path for 100 mana, which is a huge amount of money. So therefore, so Tosfos learns the vote is, in other words, he's saying that Tosfos discusses it briefly. Really, other Mefoshim explain in more detail that he's saying Mam Mocharushin Lasheni Kol Schuster Tavli Yada. You have the expression in the Gemara in various places that says that when one person sells property to another, he's selling all the schus that go along with it. Well, since Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda sold me their properties, and along with it the schus that they had, that if you were to have come back at that point and said I need my easement, then each of them could tell you it's not by me, it's by somebody else. So therefore, I bought those rights from them also, and therefore, and therefore you have no recourse. So if you're going to be quiet, then fine, then we can work something out. But if not, then I'm exercising my rights under Kol Zechus Shetov LiYadai, and I'm not going to sell you anything. Okay, so that's the machlokes of Admon and the Chachamim. So now the Gemara brings a different case that bears on this. It happened once, a man died, and before he died, he said, he gave out his nechassim, he said most of his nechassim is going to be inherited by his sons, of course, but he had a daughter. He said, I want a palm tree to be given to my daughter. Well, also Yisaimim, also Yasmi Pologlanifsi, the Yisaimim ended up dividing up the property, lo yavala dikla, and they didn't give her her palm tree. So now she's claiming from each one of them, where's my palm tree? Sovereign of Yosef Lamema Hainim Asnissim. So Rabbi Yosef thought to say that's exactly the case of our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, we're saying that each one of the surrounding property owners can say, the path isn't through my field, it's through the other guys, go deal with him. In the same way, each of the Yisraelim can tell their sister over here that the palm tree that you want isn't by me, it's by the next guy, go talk to him. That's what Rabbi Yosef thought to say. But Omele Abaye Midomi, Abaye says, how do you compare it? Hosem kochad b'chad motzi manchile. In that case, yes, each one of them can push him off because each one can say, you never had any claim on me in the first place. Your path was always to begin with in the other field. Hocha dikla gabayohu. Here the fact is, at one point, all the nechassim were together. He didn't say, the father didn't say which one of the sons is responsible to give the palm tree. So therefore, it was a chiyuv that was on all of them equally. So they can't push you off respectively. My takanasayu. So how do we fix up the situation? Let them give her the palm tree, the lad with a lift gumeresha, and then let them go redivide the property all over. In other words, we can't say that one of them should have to give the palm tree and he loses out. We're gonna say that what it means is, in other words, the whole division was done wrongly. We need to first earmark that one palm tree for her, and then the rest of the nechassim, then they can figure out among themselves how they're gonna divide it equally. Since we're mentioning such a case, so the Gemara mentions another similar case involving a person giving away a palm tree before he died. A man says to his children, Dikla levras, I want a palm tree to go to my daughter. Shochiv, then he passed away, but shavik trei palgi de dikla. He left over two halves of a palm tree, meaning, in other words, Rashi says, he had lots of other palm trees that he owned outright. Then there were two palm trees where he had a half share in each of them. He had a partnership in each of these trees with somebody else. Now, the Yisraelim would like to be able to give their sister the two halves because they figure it's a bit of a bother. Each one, you have to climb up separately. You have to take care of it separately or whatever. So it would be easier for us to give her that one. I would say to palm that one off on her, but that's a bad pun. But anyway, to give her that one, to give her the two halves that he has in partnership with somebody else. And we'll keep all the ones that he owns outright for ourselves. So is that valid? Yosef Rabashi v'kakashale. So Rabashi is sitting and wondering, mi koru inshi l'tre pagu dikla dikla oloi. Can it be expected that when the father said a palm tree, does that include two separate half palm trees, a half here, a half there, oloi or not? And the answer is, amalei Mordechai l'Rabashi, ochi yama avimi me'agrunia, mishmei d'Rabba, you should know that avimi me'agrunia said in the name of Rabba, yes, koru inshi, l'tre pagi dikla dikla, yes, people are apt to call two separate halves of a palm tree, and therefore, yes, the Yisraelim have the right to do that, to give those two halves to the daughter, and they keep the ones that the father owned outright for themselves. Rashi explains that we're talking about where there were other palm trees. There are other Rishonim who learn that the scenario is that there were no other palm trees. The only thing that's available is these two halves. The question is, do the Simon have to give those two halves to her and they don't get any palm trees at all? Or can they say, no, our father figured that he had a whole palm tree, but since he doesn't, then you don't get anything and we yaushin those two halves. And the answer is she does get the two halves. And if that means that they don't get any palm trees at all, then so be it. Okay.